From the heart of the Forest City, Blackburn Media presents the Craig Needles Podcast, looking at the biggest stories in London and around the world and how they impact you. Now here's your host, Craig Needles.
It is a brand new episode of the Craig Needles Podcast here at londonnewstoday.ca, classicrock981.com, and wherever it is you find and download your podcast. Thank you so much for doing that for us this episode. And we think that this is going to be an eye-opening conversation because we talk all the time in London about we've got to build up, not out, got to build up, not out. And I think those are worthy conversations, and we continue to have those conversations, and we should. However, when we build out, what happens? We lose farmland. Why is that important? We're going to get into a specific case a little bit later in the podcast. But first, I wanted to talk about the direction we're going in Ontario right now and why, well, it may just not be very good. So joining us is Crispin Colvin, who's the executive director of the Ontario Federation of Agriculture. It represents Lambton and Middlesex counties at the Ontario Federation of Agriculture Board, rather. And this is someone who knows what's going on with farmland in this province. So I'm really, really glad to get a few minutes of his time here on the Craig Needles Podcast. Thank you so much for doing this, Crispin. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, Craig. It's delightful to be here. Thank you.
This has been in my head for a while here is, hey, we're doing a little too much urban sprawl and it's costing us farmland. And especially in this area of the country, I have some concern about that just because we've got some pretty nice farmland here. Do you also have concerns about the way that we are planning and using our land in this province right now?
Absolutely. We lose 175 acres a day in Ontario to urban growth, whether it's factories or whether it's housing. It's 175 acres a day of farmland that we will never get back because once it's gone forever. And in terms of southern Ontario, where we are in the London area, we're land classifications are 1 through 5. 1, 2, and 3 are the best in the country, and we are in the best of the country. We are in class 1, 2, and 3 lands, and less than 5% of Ontario can support agriculture. So when you start to encroach on that, we're starting to lose the best land in the country to urbanization. So I think politicians and people in general have to start to rethink, where do we want to live? Where do we want to grow? Where do we want our factories to be? We have to start to look at the value of land as opposed to the value of just housing, just factories and businesses.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I wonder, this comes back to so many different things, but there is a housing shortage in this province right now. And to me, this just sort of underscores the importance of, hey, we've got to intensify where we are as opposed to building out, especially in a city like London, where if we build out, like that's going to be valuable farmland that goes, right?
Yes, you're absolutely right. And I was pleased to hear you use the word intensify, because that's one of the things we're starting to try and promote more with government, because too many of our properties, people want single family homes. And it's a wonderful thing to have if you can do it. I don't deny that to anybody. And agriculture needs labor, so we need housing for those people. But we have to have more intensification of housing. So in a small village, let's say like Glencoe, or even places like Strathroy that are larger, we need to start looking at 2 and 3 story walk-up apartments types of buildings to house people. Instead of just keeping on going out, we need to go up a lot more. And that needs to happen even in the City of London. And I'm pleased when London talks about developments that are going to be 15, 20 story high apartments, because that's what's needed for the growing population in Ontario.
It definitely is. And look, yeah, there are going to be some people that want the single family homes. And I think that's something that we can have. But there's also got to have to be a variety from a housing perspective. And hey, maybe we can build some apartments or condos that are 3 bedrooms and things along those lines. I think that's a conversation that we could have, because the alternative is we pave over all this valuable farmland in London. And then what does that do to our food supply, right? That's the concern I've got.
Well, it's a major concern for food supply. There are only, I believe it's 7 or 8 developed countries, major economies like Canada that actually export food. Most other countries have to import food. So when you start to look at that, this is a major economic driver, not just for this region, but for the entire country. We are a country that can export food because we grow more than we consume. But if we continue to lose farmland, we're not going to be able to grow enough to export, and hopefully we'll continue to grow enough to consume for ourselves. But then you run into other pressures from other countries as well. What we saw with the vaccine when it first came out was a form of vaccine nationalism. Countries wanted to keep it for themselves till their populations were vaccinated. Well, we could run into that with food. What happens if a country says, I'm not going to export food to you anymore, I'm keeping it for my nation and my people? That in itself could cause a level of strife that we just can avoid by changing how we grow our cities.
So what would you suggest as far as the biggest priority when it comes to the lands that we protect? Is there a certain area surrounding us that you're like, okay, we cannot build there? Or is it just everywhere? Is it all sort of the same? You mentioned the grades 1, 2, and 3 farmland. So where's the grade 1 stuff? You know what I mean? Like where is the place that's most important that we protect?
The top lands to protect are certainly Southern Ontario, from basically through Windsor, Huron, Perth, Middlesex. A lot of our lands are all very, very valuable. As well, the other valuable area of land is around the Holland Marsh. You know, we grow over 200 commodities in Ontario, but if we start to pave them over, then we won't be growing over 200 commodities in terms of food, fiber, and fuel. So when you ask me where should we build, it's a tough question to answer, and it's a tough one for politicians to deal with too. So I give them credit for trying to balance growth and economic benefits. But I think we have to start looking beyond the areas like the Londons. We have to look at places like Kingston, for example, which is a beautiful area, but the land isn't quite as good. We have to grow somewhere. We have to live somewhere. We have to have our buildings and factories somewhere. So we have to start looking as a province and as politicians at areas that perhaps we should preserve, like Southern Ontario, like the Holland Marsh, instead of continuing to grow in areas where the population currently is. Look at Niagara, for example. It used to be tons of fruit trees and wineries are still pretty predominant, but the fruit industry has really taken a beating over the years. And that's unfortunate, because that's some of the best growing in terms of the climate that we can have. Farms also provide a tremendous ecological benefit. We provide habitat for animals, like everything from birds to wolves and coyotes and foxes and rabbits and all of that. We provide drainage. We provide carbon sequestration. So there are a whole lot of benefits to keeping a lot of farmland in the area.
Yeah, there's a lot, and we've got to continue to do that. Otherwise, there could be some pretty significant consequences. So the question I've got then is, you know, when we're talking about intensification, that's not just a London conversation. That's a conversation for smaller communities as well, because as you say, these communities are growing and there are places that people are going to want to live there. So, hey, let's build over this really nice farmland to have a nice, to have a giant subdivision where there's all these single family homes. That's not what we want to do. So, you wonder, okay, this has got to be a way to intensify a place, you know, like some of the smaller non-London places in our region. And I know that leads to some political difficulty. So like you said, it's a big balancing act, right?
It's a huge balancing act. I mean, I look in my own community of Thorndale and some of the subdivisions going in and proposed subdivisions, and they're all large homes, large single family lots, and it's not a good use of our resources. And that's what it comes down to. We need to use our land resource in a far more efficient and better way than we have. We've lived in a golden age through the sort of 60s, 70s, and 80s, and even into the 90s. But we've come to the realization that we have to change how we do business, how we live, how we proceed in the future. Because if we don't make these changes now, it's going to really put our future generations in jeopardy in terms of food production and the ability to grow their own food.
So are we already in a perilous position, in your opinion, as far as the land we've already used? Or I'm not saying, oh, okay, do we have, you know, this number of hectares that we can still pave over and be okay? Because I don't think there's necessarily a way to know that. But have we already gone too far, in your opinion?
I think we're at the brink, let me put it that way. I don't want to create panic in anybody, but when less than 5% of Ontario can support agriculture, and in fact only 7% of Canada can support agriculture, that's a pretty small amount of acreage to provide a lot of food. So I don't know that I'd say we're at a tipping point, but I think we have to really start to rethink how we want to grow and where we want to put people and businesses. We need to change that mindset. And it's a tough thing to do because the pressures and the votes and the money is in southwestern Ontario, is in the GTHA area, the Greater Toronto Hamilton area. And so those are where the pressures to the politicians come in, and they need to respond to that. Those are their constituents. It's a tough balancing act. Things like, for example, I'll touch on Highway 413, the controversial highway that is going in down in the Toronto area there. And it's not just the highway that creates issues in terms of farmland. It's all the people that live up to the highway or own land by the highway. And a lot of it's developer-owned, from what I understand. And that will get developed. It will grow. So it's not just the highway that takes out the land. It's what it brings with it, which is all the housing and development that people want to have near that highway. So that in turn is another pressure. So all of these things add up to reduce the amount of arable land we have. And it's something we just can't get back once we lose it.
Yeah, you can't just say, oh, you know what, we're just going to take this highway out of there and then start growing crops on this spot again. Like, that's not how it works.
Unfortunately, no. And agriculture is a huge business. I don't think people realize that we contribute, the agri-food business, agri-food industry, agriculture, agri-food contributes $47 billion to the Ontario economy. And that's a lot of income to the Ontario economy. And it's also agriculture, according to Dominic Barton, wrote a report for the federal government on agriculture and was an economic paper altogether. And agriculture was the single biggest, and agri-food, single biggest economic driver that was going to move Canada forward. We're right now, I believe it's the fifth largest exporting nation in the world in terms of agricultural products. And his report said, if we put supports into agriculture for development, for research, we could be number two in the world in terms of agricultural development and exports. For Ontario, that would increase that $47 billion exponentially.
Yeah, and then where are we at once that happens? It just is it's poor planning that we've got to this point. So I guess the question is, what advice would you have for politicians, or what advice would you have for planners who are wondering what we should do about this stuff?
For planners, I would say, this is going to get me into trouble with some of my planning friends.
Well, that's okay.
Yeah, you've got to start to say no to people who want to develop in this area and say, let's look at other parts of the province. Planners are quick to say, I want to build in Thorndale. I want to build in Lucan. I want to build in Strathroy, somewhere where it's close and easy to do, preferably flat, no trees, no drainage to worry about. And unfortunately, we fall into that pattern. To the politicians, I would say much the same thing. We need to start looking at other areas to develop. Take away the thought in your mind that you have to grow in the Greater Toronto Hamilton area, the Greater Southwestern and London areas. We need to start looking at other areas, whether it's further to the north or whether it's further to the east. But we have to look at the value of land, what it can do, and move to those other areas.
Yeah, because just what we're doing right now just simply is not sustainable. So that's the planning advice. And I guess it's not that different from the political advice, in the perspective of you've got to learn to say no.
Unfortunately, they're pretty similar. And as I say, it's tough for politicians. I did 16 years in municipal politics. I know how difficult it can be to try and balance everybody's needs. And it's tougher when you get into the provincial and federal arenas. But we have to start rethinking our entire land use and get away from the idea that everything can be put onto a piece of property. Just as we've changed our thinking about internal combustion engines and going to electric vehicles more and more, we realize that we have to make changes in terms of transportation. We need to make those same tough decisions when it comes to land use.
Yeah, and it's a tough decision, but it's one that's got to be made. I'll ask you about one more thing before we wrap up here is, I'm sure there are some people listening to this and saying, hey, look, we've got lots of farmland. I drive from Thorndale to London every day, and I pass by all these farms, so therefore we can grow all this stuff. So therefore, this isn't that big a deal, because think about all this unused space we have in this province. But I guess the point of all this is we need to use that space. We need the space that we've got, right?
We need to use it better. But the other thing is, when people say, oh, well, we've got lots of farmland, I see it as I drive from, as you say, Thorndale to London or wherever. But what we don't do is we don't know what the value of that land is in terms of its productivity. It's extremely productive land here. We grow tomatoes. We grow bok choy. We grow all kinds of products that cannot be grown north of Barrie or north of North Bay or even parts of eastern Ontario. Either the soil isn't as good or the climate is not quite the same. So we have a tremendous growing season here in southern Ontario. We have the right amount of moisture. We have the right good soils. We have sunlight. We have the heat units. But it does no good to us if it's growing houses instead of food.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect spot to leave it. Crispin, this was a fantastic conversation and very informative. Thank you so much for doing this with me. Is there anything else that you think people should really know about or you want to add before we wrap up here?
Well, I guess just as much as anything, it's be aware of what's happening to the land and be conscious of what you do with farmland, because we do contribute not just food, but as I said earlier, a lot of the environmental benefits to farmland and even the aesthetics. In this time of COVID, I've had people come by and they stop and they take pictures of my cows out in the field. And yeah, there's a mental health benefit to having farmland and open space that you can just drive down the road and walk along the edge of the road and look at a farm. So be aware of what we have and appreciate what we have.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. Crispin, thank you so much. This is a great conversation. I'm glad that we could have it.
Craig, my pleasure. And anytime at all, I'd be happy to talk to you. It's been great. I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
That's Crispin Colvin talking about agriculture with us here on the Craig Needles podcast, talking about why it's important that we stop paving over our farmland as aggressively as we have. I want to talk about a specific case in Mount Elgin on the other side of the break. And a community group there is standing up and saying, hey, we've got some valuable farmland here and we don't want to lose it to a subdivision with a whole bunch of houses. So stick around. More coming up on the Craig Needles podcast. To continue the conversation now and get a little bit more specific, we talked with Crispin Colvin about the issue from a macro level. I want to talk about it from a micro level. And there's an ongoing conversation about a development in Mount Elgin. So I wanted to talk with a couple of folks who live there about what that conversation is all about and sort of how it relays back to what I was just talking about with Crispin Colvin. So Paula Bartlett is joining me, as is Kath Kendry, and they both live in the Mount Elgin area, and they're going to talk about the proposed development there. Paula, Kath, thank you so much for doing this. I'm glad that you could spend a few minutes on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Craig.
Thanks.
So first, tell me about this development. You live in Mount Elgin, and from a background perspective, Mount Elgin, not exactly, I will say, a bustling metropolis. It's a relatively small place, not terribly far from London, where I am, but so south of Ingersoll on Highway 19. So there's a conversation about another subdivision going into Mount Elgin, over which would go some pretty nice farmland, a relatively nice farmland, depending on who you talk to. What's the conversation been like in the community there about this?
Well, it is a small hamlet between Ingersoll and Tillsonburg. As it is currently, there's just 62 houses in the phase five under construction of the infrastructure at this moment, and another 20 just finishing up. Those are part of the settlement of Mount Elgin. And once those are completed, the settlement is complete, with the exception of the land surrounding the Oxford Christian School. And apparently they have no intention at this time to use their land for that purpose. This developer has come in, the same developer who has developed the rest of this subdivision, and he has purchased this farmland, and he wants to put in another 247 homes. And that would, of course, there are 40 townhouses and 207 single family homes. The homes here, with the premise they're going to be affordable homes, but the homes here started $1 million.
That doesn't sound super affordable to most budgets.
No, no. And this is prime agricultural land, and it's zoned, I believe it's MSI-2 for quality, and it grows beautiful crops, corn and soy every year.
And, you know, we need corn and we need soy. And like I was just talking about with Crispin Colvin, the crops that come from our region are pretty significant in the food economy of London. So, Kath, when you hear that, hey, this is something that that might be happening, that that may be something that occurs here, what are your concerns in the Mount Elgin area?
Well, my concern is not just Mount Elgin. It's happening in Halton. It's happening in Hamilton. Yeah. It's called urban sprawl. We've already lost 3.1 million acres of prime agriculture farmland in Ontario since 1976. Now, I don't know about you, but there's a finite amount of ag land in this province.
5%.
At some point, there's not going to be anywhere to grow crops or food to feed all these people who are building these houses. Just a clarification, the settlement area is an area in this municipality laid out in the Oxford official plan. And outside of that settlement area, the official plan has to be amended. So a developer comes in, buys the land, and says, look, we spent all this money. You need to give us the land to build these houses. And a lot of people just sit back and say, well, there's nothing I can do about it. But there were four of us who said, listen, it has to stop someplace. They're trying to build a town in a village. We have a gas station, a liquor store, and a small corner store. That's the only amenities in this village.
And the liquor store is in the corner. It's in the gas station.
It's in the gas station. Now,
well, that's convenient.
They do a hell of a business on a Friday night. However, if you live here, you have to take your car and drive someplace for everything else in life. So that doesn't make any sense. Developers need to infill dense areas that are already existing with all the amenities. There's no school here. There's a private school, but you can't send your kids to it because unless you're a good Christian, you can't go there. And there's a lot of people in this village who aren't good Christians, so they'll never get the kids in the door.
Is there an aptitude test or something? How does that work?
Well, there's a funding test.
Oh, a funding test. Oh, no, I'm joking around. We're getting off topic.
Right.
But the point stands that
dumb to build houses in a village that have no amenities for the people who want to live here.
No, we've had confirmation. There's no school coming. There's no interest by the school boards. The Tilsonburg and Ingersoll and Woodstock schools are already overcrowded with portables. We don't have fire hydrants. We don't have a shuttle certified tanker truck. If there was a fire or explosion with 500 houses in one little corner, good luck. And it's a volunteer fire department. So these are all issues. We have one tiny parkette, the side of the regional highway, two-lane regional highway. That's the busiest provincial highway, apparently, in Ontario, two-lane. It just doesn't make sense in any way, shape, or form.
And there are ways that, you know, having more people live in Mount Elgin might make sense. But we're not talking about those ways necessarily. And we were talking about this just before we started recording. But if we're talking about, oh yeah, a low-rise apartment building type of situation where there's, you know, 40 units or something, that's a bit of a different conversation than, hey, let's build a few hundred homes and sprawl out over this farmland. You know, it's a different type of clientele, a different, just everything. anything would be different, but that's not what we're talking about here.
Yeah, and the thing is about that too, there, if you look at the county plan for Oxford, or sorry, Southwest Oxford, mm-hmm. there are five areas adjacent to Woodstock, Ingersoll, and Tillsonburg that they have designated on the county plan for future urban development. I know the mayor and the councilors like to say that this was always in the cards, that they were going to put more housing here, but it's not part of the county plan. They already have designated land for that. And to take land out of the agricultural prime farmland, out of production, they have to make a really strong case that there's no other land available, and they can't because they have already designated five areas. And those areas are close to highways, transportation, and all the amenities that anybody would need.
So what's the reaction been from, you know, various levels of government to the concerns in the community about this?
Well, they're basically just saying, it's trying to say that, yeah, this was in the cards a long time ago. And, you know, they from what we're seeing, they're going to do it. They're not going to, I guess to go backwards a little bit, they just recently had a meeting where the golf course asked for 25 acres of land to be taken out of production. And now this is 60. And they gave it a green light. It doesn't have ministry approval for a driveway off the highway. They're just basically going to use it for a driveway to the golf course and maybe some a garden for their restaurant. And they didn't think twice about it. It was like, yep, here you go. So we kind of see the writing on the wall here with the Ford government in place trying to, you know, give their developer friends the in to just pave over all the farmland. We're seeing it in Hamilton and Halton. It's here. It's in Wilmot Township. It's in Cambridge in the village of Blair. It's everywhere. And the Brantford bypass, or the Bradford bypass, people need to wake up. We're losing farmland, 175 acres a day.
That's a lot of acres. And we're going to need that eventually. And the problem, and I was talking about this with Crispin Colvin, you can't just be like, oh, actually, we needed that farmland. Let's bulldoze those houses. That's not how this goes.
And once it's gone, it's gone.
Exactly. So, Kath, what do you want to see happen here?
I want some people in charge to wake up and start thinking outside of the box. They need to infill in cities and towns instead of trying to sprawl out to rural Ontario. Doug Ford just had a task force, and there was 55 recommendations made on affordable housing on that task force. Nowhere in the task force report did it even define what affordable housing is. I've yet to find anybody to give me a definition of that. And on that task force, we had a banker in charge. We had developers and builders on the task force. No environmental advocates, nobody advocating for the poor, nobody talking about rent controls. All we had was people that Doug Ford wants to help make a lot of money.
And that's been a relatively consistent theme. We were talking about that with the highway proposal in the GTA there, which is, hey, wait, this is something that is going to cost us a lot of farmland. And yeah, there's going to be some money to be made, but perhaps it's better to find other places to make money, or say, hey, if we're going to do developments, let's build up instead of out, which is something that I've been advocating for, and I know a lot of others have been advocating for a very long time.
That would take administrators thinking outside of the box.
And that would take some cities, well, and I'll call out London here, making it a little bit easier to build up as opposed to just talking a good game about it. But there's that too.
Well, yeah, and that's why they're talking about other levels of government, other municipalities, laneway houses, in-law suites in, you know, basements, and adding, you know, second and third story, you know, fourplexes, sixplexes on lots instead of these little McMansions that are going for more than $1 million. Start with affordable housing that people can't afford. Rent out rooms, cottage homes, laneway homes. That's where they need to be infilling. When you see old vacant warehouses and industrial buildings, renovate those. I know the city of Cambridge, where I used to live, they've done a marvelous job with that. The region of Waterloo is trying to infill their city. Their skyline has changed dramatically. You see all kinds of tall buildings there. There's another one going in Belmont Center. I believe it's going to be 11 stories that got a bit of pushback But that's how you infill a city. People don't need cars. You know, it keeps the economy going. They're in walking distance. It's better for the climate. They don't need to have funds for a car. They're close to transportation and highways, industry, commerce, amenities, everything you need to live in a walkable society.
Part of the problem is our developers who don't want to build $400,000 homes. They want to build $1 million homes that they can make a lot more money on.
I'll push back on that a little, just because I just don't think you can build $400,000 standalone homes in most places anymore. You know what I mean?
No. And then the other issue with that, too, is once they get, they can come in and say, a developer or builder, I'm going to build low end or lower income homes, mm-hmm. affordable homes. Once they get the okay to build, the region, municipality, county cannot dictate their price. They can sell it for whatever they like.
Whatever they can get, essentially.
Yes. And they do. We see it here.
I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do. Yeah. So I'll ask both of you before we wrap up here, what would be your messaging going forward to the people who are making the decisions here? So I'm talking about county council. I'm talking about the people who get to make the call as to whether that particular piece of farmland becomes a subdivision with a whole bunch of houses.
My take would be go by the county plan. We have 5 areas for future urban growth. And the one piece we didn't touch on, they're looking at developing out to the next 30 years. Why are we going so far in the future when we truly don't know what the future holds? Why is this not 5 or 10 years at a time following the census? How many people are actually coming here and using the land that's already been designated for future urban growth?
Slight commentary on that for me is we're in the middle of a pretty significant societal change right now with this pandemic. I have mm-hmm. no idea what housing patterns are going to look like in 5 to 10 years.
Nobody does. Yeah.
So there's that too.
What they had forecast 5 years ago didn't happen.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Places like Mount Elgin may be more in demand 5 years from now because, I can work at what was my office job in downtown Toronto, and now I can work remotely. So I'm going to live in Mount Elgin because I hate the idea of living in downtown of a city. And Mount Elgin's a very nice place. Yeah, sure. Okay. But I don't know that's going to be the case yet. So let's just think about this before we start paving over farmland. Kath, is there anything you want to add to that?
Well, I was told last May when I first pushed back on this expansion that it was a done deal. So yes, I would like to firmly remind these people that we elected them and we can also unelect them. And if they think that us 4 women who have been fighting this are going to sit back and watch them get easy elected, I got news for them.
Yeah,
I think it to the polls.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is there's municipal elections coming up in October. I suspect that in Mount Elgin, this is going to be an issue that people talk about.
And another one in June, a big one.
Yeah, there's an election in June too. Now,
but what's the point of having elected officials who ignore the electorate?
It's a good question. Now there'll be some that, and I'll say this for the sake of. People listening to this podcast right now, someone might be saying, hey, I'm in the electorate and I love the idea of there being more houses in Mount Elgin. I don't know any of those people. They haven't reached out to me or anything along those lines. So the politicians might say, well, some of the electorate wants this. But to me, this is just clearly bad for the health of the province if we're paving over farmland and we're doing it again and again and again and again. Like that's just very, very clear at this point in our lives.
Yeah.
When they started this building over 10 years ago, we were ensured that with the subdivision that was being built, more amenities would come to this village. The only thing that's come to the village is a liquor store.
Sure, they got a nice selection, but yeah.
That's for traffic coming through the village, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so cart before the horse in this situation here, I think.
Yeah, traffic is already so heavy here. We don't have proper septic systems. We have septic systems. We don't have sewage. Mm-hmm. We all have primarily, if you speak to most residents here, people have had water issues inside or outside on their lots. There's a lot of water in the land. We actually have Reynolds Creek watershed running through our property. There's an aquifer in the property behind us and all throughout the hamlet here. And It's part of the Long Point and Thames River conservations. So we're hoping they step up. There's a heritage woodlot. They're proposing to put a walking trail around and continue that along railroad tracks in place of a park. There'll be no park for all these children to play. We have one tiny parkette that would be for, you know, 500 homes on this corner. So potentially maybe like 1,000 people, and you can't get into the parkette on a good day now.
We just
don't have anything here for it.
Well, we'll wrap it up there just because I know that you both got days to get back to, and I said I wouldn't take up much of your time. So thank you both so much for providing a perspective on this for me. It's nice to look at a large issue. And there's the dog. We talked about the dog right before. And there's the dog at the very end of the podcast.
Yeah.
But that's okay. That's okay. It'll be a nice Easter egg for the folks that stayed to the end.
Thanks for your time, Craig.
That was wonderful. So much, Paula Craig. Kaff, thank you so much, okay?
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Paula Bartlett and Kaff Kendry here on the Craig Needles podcast. Mount Elgin residents concerned about what's going on. And I know that some people are going to email me and say, Craig, you complain about NIMBY people all the time. I complain about people who don't want neighbors because they think it would be inconvenient. When someone says, hey, this is part of a very troubling pattern in our province and we're losing farmland, that's a different conversation, folks. A very different conversation. Which, if you want to have it, we can maybe do it some other day. We've got no more time on this episode of the podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Whether you're at classicrock981.com, londonnewstoday.ca, or on your favorite podcatcher. We'll talk to you next time here on the Craig Needles Podcast.
The Craig Needles Podcast is a presentation of Blackburn Media.